Remake Rewind.
All right, it's time for another Remake Rewind. Podcast where you decide if remakes or reboots should have happened. I'm Mike, as always, and I've got my bud, Mr. Alex. What's up, Mr. Alex?
That's me. I'm still Alex.
You're still Alex.
Yeah.
And we are doing one of the last movies to come out before the pandemic started.
We sure are.
A classic horror franchise.
I feel like you're saying that jokingly, but it is.
No, I'm not saying it jokingly. Okay. It is a classic horror franchise at this point. And horror's your wheelhouse. Like, I bet you were really excited to cover these two movies, which I haven't said yet.
I wouldn't use the word really, but I was excited to revisit them, revisit the old one and check out the new one. Especially when I remember that Sam Raimi produced it, did it under Ghost House banner.
And his little baby brother was in the movie.
In the first one?
In the first one. So yeah, we're doing The Grudge.
Yeah.
The 2004, both versions of the American ones. We're not doing the original one for some reason, which at this point in retrospect, I wish we did. But we are doing the 2004 American version.
Well,
and the 2020 American version, which is kind of a remake, kind of a reboot, but they want to have their cake and eat it too and say it's a sequel, but it really isn't. There's like one line of dialogue linking them.
There's an answer to your question. We're doing these two because this one is a direct sequel or, you know, direct sidequel to the American one. And this one came out this year.
Yeah.
It's the most relevant.
Almost. It came out a year ago.
We're in 2021 now. You're right.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have watched Ju-on, but I might just do that on my own time. I kind of want to watch the second American one too. Grudge 2.
I'm just going to go out and say, I've said it on the podcast before, I'm not a big horror fan. Like, I'm more like into the suspense ones, and this borders on that, but I didn't like the original when it came out. I also worked at the theater when it came out and had to kick a lot of kids out for being jackasses in the theater. So I just don't have a positive kind of memory of the original one. And I was really actually interested in going back to it because my tastes and things that I like have changed drastically since 2004. There are a lot of movies that I've covered on this podcast that I know I wouldn't have liked as a teenager that I love now. So I was hoping, I was going in with this positive.
Didn't do it for you?
I'm coming into the recording not positive.
I remember not really feeling one way or the other about the original when I saw it in theaters back in 2004. Because the Ring had just come out, and it was part of this whole like revolution of American remakes of Japanese horror movies. And I really enjoyed The Ring, and this one just like felt too similar, and I was like, all right, well, that was another movie, you know. And I haven't really thought about it in the interim, but I was excited to go back and rewatch it because I haven't heard anything bad about it, and I don't really remember that much. So I was like, oh, this will be interesting to check out again. And
it did really well, the original. Like, it was a hit.
I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed the original.
I liked the 2004. I'm just going to say at the top, I did like the 2004 version better than the 2020.
It's the superior film, like, objectively.
Yeah. But let's just get into it. Like, you want to give us the summary slash... pitch, the movie pitch, elevator pitch.
Yeah. Let's see. Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Excellent. On my way to the board meeting.
So you remember how that that Japanese horror movie, the remake, The Ring, did really well?
Oh yeah, my kids loved that creepy girl crawling out of the TV.
I've got another property with another creepy girl, and she's also got some hair in her face, and we can just make that really cheap. And we're probably gonna make a bunch of money.
Oh, sick!
So
let's do it.
All right, cool. That's the elevator pitch.
So the one thing that you can say that's interesting about this, you brought up earlier, and also in your pseudo elevator pitch, that this. It's just another Japanese remake that was really popular for about a decade after The Ring came out, which was just a couple years before this one. What this one does different than The Ring, there's also Dark Water, Pulse, and One Missed Call that were all Japanese horror remakes that came out between like 2002 and 2008. All of those, they took the story and just transplanted it into America, where this is like actually took place in Japan still. It just put a couple American protagonists in it.
It's directed by the same director as the original, the Japanese one.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. That he got to remake his movie. They did that with Funny Games too. I like when a director gets the opportunity to remake their movie with a little bit more of a budget and a little bit of hindsight. I haven't seen Ju-on, so I can't really compare those two. But I felt like the original, I feel like the 2004 American Grudge was like a really confident movie. And even though my pitch was, cynical and funny, I think this movie stands on its own and differentiates itself from The Ring quite a bit, and does a great job of being its own thing. Like, they're both ghost movies, but I feel like they seem similar to Western audiences because we kind of just see like, oh, a girl with hair in her face or whatever. That's the same type of ghost. But you know, I think that might be the same way that like somebody from another culture might see The Shining and The Conjuring and be like, okay, well, those are also both ghost movies. Those are similar. But to us, those movies aren't similar at all. And I think the way that the 2004 Grudge is shot and told is really strong and completely different from The Ring as well. Like, they're both ghost stories that are mysteries that you're trying to put together. So that's similar. But this one doesn't look like a Hollywood film.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it looks like a Japanese movie. It's very like muted, and the way that they choose to like compose a lot of the scenes doesn't feel Hollywood-y. And The Ring is another great movie, but that feels very American. It feels very Hollywood.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and I think
in a good way.
To your point, another way of separating it from The Ring and a lot of these other American versions of Japanese horror films is that this one, and I believe Ju-on did this as well, but this makes it a little bit more confusing for that mystery element. I do think this did it better than the newer one, but having this isn't a chronological film. It has multiple story points. Yeah, multiple storylines that go back and forth between them, and
sort of Tarantino'd
well enough. Yeah, Tarantino, Memento kind of style, and not playing things in order. You kind of see different stories in different timelines. So there's essentially three timelines, and they all intersect in the same curse.
Yeah,
and that's ambitious for an American audience in a PG-13 horror film that's meant for teeny boppers
in 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to give them credit for not dumbing it down, which a lot of other people would have dumbed it down for American audience.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the proof is all the other movies that we just mentioned in this American Japanese horror film remake. Like, most of those other movies are dumbed down, and that's why they're forgettable.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm trying to think of like what else to say about this movie. Like, I know you said you didn't enjoy it, but I really enjoyed it.
I think the problem is, and I did read a few reviews after. I didn't read anything about it going into it, because I tend not to read reviews until after, just to see what people said.
Sure.
And I do agree. A lot of the reviews said the ambiance was good. The acting was mixed. I don't think everybody in this was giving their best performance. And I don't think the story is that strong. I think there's a lot of holes in it. Now, granted, this is an American version. It had American writers who changed it up a little bit for the director who directed the original one. So I'm sure there are certain things that, from a cultural standpoint, just maybe I'm missing. But I didn't really understand the curse. In this, it's just a curse. Later in the newer one, they call it the Ju-on. To me, it seemed that there was no rhyme or reason to who was getting stalked, who was getting killed, where they got killed, why they got killed, how they got killed. It just seemed like she prefers to kill in her house, but she can kill other places, but generally she doesn't. And then it's just like towards the end of the movie, it's just like she has every power that a ghost could ever have.
This was a problem that I had when I first saw it. And I thought about it in the first like half of this viewing. And by the second half of it, it didn't really bother me as much. I think I started to feel like it was more about, and I think this is a cultural difference. I think this is American Hollywood movies versus European or Asian movies. I think it's more about setting a mood and like a general feeling that they're trying to convey with this thing. And that, you know, it gets you so far for sure. Like yeah. In this movie, when you see her, this is a CG thing too, but like when her hair, when she's in the corner of the room and their hair like descends and then her face is like on the end of this hair snake thing, then it's kind of like, all right, what's going on here? And there's a moment like halfway through the movie where she appears on the security camera footage and it's like messing up the footage. And then it's kind of like, okay, is she like, is she a digital kind of ghost? Or like pulse or something, or is she a shadow creature? Like what, if she can just do anything, then it's not as much fun. So I agree with that.
Yeah.
It didn't ruin the movie for me, but it's definitely there.
And the other thing was there's technically three ghosts, and in most of the advertising and the trailers, I remember you really just saw the kid, the little boy with the cat is like pretty much all we saw in like trailers and stuff before the movie came out. And that was the thing that people made fun of a lot afterwards. Like in one of the scary movies, there's like a little kid kind of thing. But the way this is set up, it's supposed to be the general idea of the curse is, and we get a little like preamble.
If somebody hasn't seen this movie, we should probably like talk about what happens in the movie a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get into now. That's why I was bringing up kind of like the preamble. So the movie starts with like opening text after we see... Like there's a small little scene and then it goes, when someone dies in the grip of a powerful rage, a curse is born. The curse gathers in the place of death. Those who encounter it will be consumed by its fury. And that's kind of like the summary of the curse. And what I guess we should, I don't even know how to talk about the plot of this movie. Should we like do it chronologically or should we do it how it was shot and how it was presented to us? Because that's the thing that I was struggling before bringing up the plot was how do we talk
I want to talk about the order of how things happen because I want to talk about that with the new one too. So let's talk about it chronologically.
Okay. So just so everyone knows, if you haven't seen it, you should go watch it before you listen to us talk about it. But this movie is not in order. It jumps around from protagonist to protagonist and essentially all the protagonist's stories end. And then there's kind of like one through line, which is Sarah Michelle Gellar, who plays Karen. So essentially, God, I'm going to butcher these names. I can't remember any of the names because it's been almost a week since I watched it. The ghost name is what? Kayako. So Kayako is kind of obsessed with Bill Pullman, who's like a college professor in Japan.
That's the most unbelievable part of this movie.
Right. And the movie, like the cold open of the movie is Bill Pullman, like on a balcony in Japan.
So effective.
Yeah, I thought it was a good cold open, but that's really towards the end of the movie, or it would be chronologically like the middle, but essentially Kayako is killed by her husband because he finds a diary.
In the middle?
It would be chronologically like in the middle of the movie because another family moves in after he kills himself. That's where it's like confusing. So that's the cold open.
He kills himself really like 3 years prior.
Right, but there is, it's still towards the beginning of the movie. Yeah. I'm dumb. So Kayako... Yes. Has a journal and I guess letters that she wrote to Bill Pullman, who's a college professor, and she's like obsessing over him. Her husband finds the journal / letters and decides to kill her and their son
and
their cat. And then like hides the body. Like the wife, Kayako, is like put up in the attic. The little boy and the cat are put in like a closet and boarded up. And then he kills himself. And Bill Pullman decides, like, hey, I've got this letter. I'm going to go like talk to her and be like, this is inappropriate. And he goes to the house and he finds the ghost of the little boy and gets freaked out, goes home, kills himself. And that's the kind of the cold open.
Well, I think it's not really clear, but I think he was being haunted. Also.
He was. He got crushed. Yeah, it's not super clear. And we don't really know how long after he encounters the ghosts in right. the house, the little boy, until he kills himself. So it's not super clear. Then another family moves in, and they're pretty much affected by the ghost immediately. Like, we still don't know really any timeline, but it seems like this family moves in. It's they're Americans as well, but it's the mom, the dad, a little boy, and an older mom who's like an invalid, right? This is all one family, right? Am I okay? Correct. So they get killed, and they leave the invalid mom there. And during the timeline that they get killed, there's like a nursing service who's run by Sam Raimi's brother,
Ted,
and they send one nurse over, and the nurse doesn't show up to like doesn't call it and check in. So then they send Sarah Michelle Gellar, and she finds the old lady who's like creeped out because the first nurse got killed like immediately upon entering this house. And so the rest of the movie is Sarah Michelle Gellar trying to unpack this mystery while she's also being haunted by the ghost. She teams up with this like detective who like refuses to go into the house because he's like, yeah, some bad shit's happening there. And then her boyfriend decides to go look for her in the house and like dies of fright. Like, we don't even see the ghost kill him, but he dies of fright.
So the conceit of this movie is anybody that goes into the house is cursed. Like, as soon as you step foot in this house, you will die at some point whenever the ghost gets
Did
to you.
The sister of the family, the husband, go into the house?
The sister's family. He has a sister.
So the one that you mentioned that you saw on the cameras the first time. So there's this woman who's going around like this business park, and she keeps looking over her shoulder and like seeing the ghost briefly.
There's a scene
and
where
it follows her home.
Her
that
and
was the
brother.
Sister.
Her and the brother, and the brother's wife. The brother is one of the dudes from Lost, by the way.
Yeah,
I can't not think of that guy. They all walk around the house together.
Oh, okay, so she did technically go in the house. They just waited
like the
to
Japanese.
Kill her.
Yeah, with a Japanese real estate dude, and then I think there's a translator as well.
Right. So
there's
the
a scene
nurse
where they all
gets,
walk around, decide to take it.
The nurse house. Gets killed pretty much immediately. She walks in.
Yoko.
And like says hi to the invalid woman. And then like Emma. Hears a cat and like cuts open the closet door, and like the cat gets out, she sees the little boy, and then she looks up, and then Kayoko just like yanks her up, and like that's it.
That's
and
all
this
for
movie
Yoko.
Is
That's
yeah,
all,
is
all
totally,
Yoko wrote.
Yeah, PG-13. Like, you don't really see anything gnarly. Like, it's mostly jump scares and like creepiness.
There's a scene of Yoko post getting her jaw ripped off. That's pretty gory, but that's like
yeah,
the
towards
big,
the end.
That's the big scare of the movie.
Yeah,
or the big like gory whatever.
So Sarah Michelle Gellar's like creeped out. She starts investigating. She ends up. Hooking up with the not hooking up, she touches base with like this detective who's been like researching and looking at security footage, and she asks him what's what, and he's like, yeah, I think this place is haunted. So he goes to burn the house down, and then Sarah Michelle gets home, and she has a voicemail from her boyfriend like, hey, I checked your browser history on your computer and saw that you researched this house, so I just assumed you went to this house. Sarah Michelle Gellar goes to the house. And then this is where we kind of get the info dump. She, for whatever reason, when she goes to the house a second time, she's just like walking around the house, and she can see all the shit that happened. So first she sees Bill Pullman like walking around, and Bill Pullman discovering the ghost. And then she sees the initial murders. And then she finds the boyfriend. The boyfriend's like, I'm scared. And then like the ghost like crawls up on him and just is like, boo. And then he just goes catatonic, and she's like, well, I guess he's dead. And then she tries to light the house on fire, and then she gets to the hospital, and like another detective is like, it's a good thing we saved the house. And then you see the ghost behind Sarah Michelle Gellar, and she's like, aw, shit. And then the movie ends. Like, that's the simplest way to get through it. Like,
yeah, that's something.
I.
You really boiled it down.
Like, That's the movie. Like, it's just creepiness. Like, every time someone's like alone, you just see kind of a ghost, or you hear
that our ASMR. If you're a patron, we'll send you 20 minutes of us making these sounds.
But yeah, that's
yeah. I mean, you kind of boiled it down in a way that doesn't really do the movie justice, I think. But
I was just trying to get a really quick summary, and so like people listening can have like a high level overview of the story.
Right. Right. I'm trying to think of like what else. Sorry.
The gory part that you mentioned, like the probably the scariest, because Americans kind of associate gore with scariness or jump scares with scariness, is the part where you mentioned you see Yoko with her jaw ripped off. For some reason, she starts stalking her boss, and the boss is like leaving work, and he sees her in the stairwell, and he's like,
"He went into the house." He went into the house.
Oh, did he go into the house?
Did you watch this movie? He was,
dude, I didn't really understand what was going on. It jumped around so many goddamn times. Okay, so he went to the house. I thought,
yeah,
those stairs were at the house. It looked like an office park staircase.
That was like, she works. I mean, you mentioned this earlier. I think she works for, or she's getting credits from a university, and the university is, or at least the program that she's in, is training social workers or something. So she gets a credit by, you know, spending a semester checking or being available to check in on people that have dementia or whatever. So Ted Raimi, her boss, works at the university and runs that program. So when Yoko is killed, but nobody knows that, she doesn't show up for work the next day, and she's not answering her phone, which is a funny thing because it's 2004. Like in 2020, if someone's not answering your phone, you're like, oh, there's something seriously wrong. But in 2004, you have to remember, like, not everybody has a cell phone. She might just be asleep or something. She might be sick.
Right.
But anyway, she doesn't call in and she doesn't show up for work. So Ted Raimi calls Sarah Michelle Gellar and he's like, yo, Yoko isn't responding. I need someone to go check on this woman. Can you go do it? And she's like, all right. So she shows up to the house and sees the ghost, Kayako, kill Emma. And Sarah Michelle Gellar's like in a state of shock. And but I guess she manages to call the police or whatever. The police end up maybe the guy realizes that she hasn't checked in. For whatever happens, the police show up. It's a crime scene, or it's a death. Somebody's died here. Bunch of police show up and start combing the whole place, and that's how we get the introduction to the detectives and stuff. And that's when Ted Raimi is in the house, and that's when he gets cursed. And that leads me to maybe like the big missed opportunity of this series, of this the American franchise. There's like 20 people in the house between the detectives, and I think I saw some like beat cops in there, and the coroner, right, and all of these people. There's a lot of people that are going to get grudged, and we don't really revisit that.
Even like a newspaper clipping or something like that would be interesting to be so-and-so died. And like,
and all that is also to say, like, as inconsistent as the, her methods of stalking or killing her or the victims are, I feel like the rule of the movie is very clear. If you enter the house, you're fucked,
right?
And that's kind of like,
as long as you're consistent with that,
that's all I really need. Like, it might not be a legendary movie, but it's going to be fun. You know, it'll hold up to a certain extent.
Yeah, and so I mean,
I point that out because we're going to talk about the new movie after this.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, yeah, you're right. Alex did go to the house. I totally missed for that. I just saw the stairs because he's just had a stairwell, so it looked like an office park to me. The other thing that's a little interesting is the sister, Susan, goes home after being stalked by the ghost, sees the ghost, like she lifts up her sheets and the ghost is just like right between her legs, and then she just disappears. Like
she gets sucked into the bed.
Yeah,
that's like one of those things where I feel like Sam Raimi, you know, or whoever is just like, well, they're going to get killed by the ghost. Let's just make it look cool. It doesn't have to jive with.
I kind of wish, I think it would have been more interesting because for the most part, people got lured back to the house, whether it was to try to put an end to the curse or, you know, the ghost somehow luring the boyfriend over there, which made Sarah Michelle Gellar go back. I kind of would have liked if it was that, like people just kept getting drawn back against their, you know, best wishes. They shouldn't go back. But I think that was a kind of a flaw in the movie to me.
I'd have to look at
sister just disappeared.
I'd have to look at the timeline, or maybe it's just a missed opportunity in the way that the movie is told. I like the idea that at first you believe that people only get killed in the house, and then halfway through the movie you realize that it just follows you anywhere. So then that moment is kind of like, oh, you're fucked wherever you go. You can't escape it. I think that's a cool moment. I don't know if it came across in the original.
No, I don't think so. And I know Sarah Michelle Gellar dies in the second one, like pretty early in the second one.
So if I was remaking this movie, that's something that I would try to hit.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, it is just, it's a creepy movie, you know, because of the atmosphere. There's a few jump scares.
I really like talking about atmosphere. I just want to talk about the atmosphere for a second.
Yeah.
I think the house is, the set of the house is, the house is gorgeous, first of all.
Especially in Japan, it's huge.
Yeah. The inside of the house is just really well made. Like, it's really fucking creepy. Yeah. And like the layout and the color and aging choices for the walls and stuff. It's a really effective set. And then they also do this thing, that there are like some wind chimes outside the house, and there are multiple stretches of the movie where all you're hearing are the wind chimes, and a character is just like, you know, looking around creepy or whatever. And that was super effective for me.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that it just brought it down for me, I really didn't like the reveal at the end, how it was just like, the ghost decides that Sarah Michelle Gellar needs to know everything. So she sees Bill Pullman uncovering the mystery. And it's just like, well, why her? Why does she get to... It's because as an audience, we need to wrap it up. I would have rather her Scooby-Dooed it a little bit more.
I think
figured it out.
I think that in 2004, and even more to the point, when was the original one made? Ju-on was...
It's 2 years before. It was 2002.
Yeah, 2002. So I think 2002, 2004, the idea that if somebody dies in a gruesome, horrible way, that the place where they died is cursed, I think that was a much more effective idea than it is in 2020, because we're kind of like jaded by it now. And even more so, I think, without doing any research, I think that type of ghost has been around in Japanese culture for a little bit too. So it's more of a traditional ghost story than to us. To us, it's just like us. Right.
And I think there is a social disconnect on that. Because the other thing that I don't understand is like the top of the movie with the text when it says someone dies in the grip of a powerful rage. To me, it seems like the husband is the one who's in the rage and he died. Like, why is the mother the main ghost? Like, she's the one that's the driving factor. Why is it not the kid? Why is it not the father? They both kind of show up, but they're not really, like, the aggressive ones.
Yeah, and also, that idea is held to Japan, I'm sure that plenty of people died in battlefields in Japan in terrible ways.
Right.
You know what I mean? Well, so there'd be ghosts all over the fucking place.
Why isn't every murder caused that?
Yeah.
Like, people get murdered all the time.
Yeah.
Why are there not a tons of grudges going around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of just doesn't hold up super well, but I also think that maybe American audiences are a little bit more nitpicky.
I think so. Cause I kind of laughed at the end, honestly, with like her being revealed. Like, there was points where like when she was watching Bill Pullman, like Bill Pullman would kind of like look at her and it's like, can he see her? Well, clearly not, because this is in the past. And I think also it's like, well, we got Bill Pullman, so we need to give him a little bit more to do, so we'll have him be the reveal and walk around the house. Like, that's this what I was thinking. Like, I was almost like meta watching the movie. Like, I never really got engrossed in the movie, so I think it was hard for me to enjoy it, because I just saw these flaws and could not suspend my disbelief. And I think that's a me problem, nothing else. But
yeah, I think there's a handful of things that hold this movie back from being better or more memorable.
Yeah, like, it definitely has potential, but yeah, it didn't work for me.
Well, no, I mean, I think I'm saying the opposite. I think it doesn't have potential. I think it reached its potential.
You think so?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think you're just not going to be able to convince the majority of American audiences to overlook everything that we've talked about that they're familiar with in horror movies. And also just that idea that if you die in a terrible rage, you become a grudge ghost.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, everybody, you know, everybody that's been murdered died in terrible rage. So they're all ghosts. Like,
yeah. I just think it wasn't executed. I think there's a way you could do this and make it good. I just don't think they did it. And it's also 2004. Like, 2004 was not the pinnacle of horror. We're kind of in like a horror renaissance right now. Like, the last 10 years or so, we've seen a lot more movies, commercially viable, successful ones.
I would argue. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I think you're right in a lot of ways, but I think it's a much more nuanced conversation, because I think you could also make an argument that we're in like a very, or maybe we're just exiting like a very derivative, studio driven horror cycle.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I think indie horrors are,
back on indie the horror. You're seeing a lot of those movies where people start talking about them, and then you hear about, like, Mandy with Nicolas Cage was kind of like a sleeper hit. And now, like, a lot of you either love that movie or you hate it.
There's a few of those every year, too. Like,
yeah.
Hereditary and Midsommar, too.
Exactly. Raw. And that's what I'm talking about. We're starting to get those where they're sleeper, and then they find, like, they find get distributed, and then they find mainstream. Like, we're seeing a lot more of things like that. Like, Invisible, like, Blumhouse is doing a lot of.
Well,
and that's a different thing, like, for better or worse. Like, but Blumhouse, for every movie that they've done 5, 6, 7 of, they throw out some random one where you're like, oh, that was pretty good. So,
yeah, just to, you know, wrap up the potential idea, I think that you and I are sort of saying similar things in different, but also saying the opposite. I think that this movie probably reached its potential, and I think it's pretty good. I don't think there's a way to make a better version of this, but I liked it more than you did.
Yeah, you definitely did.
But I'm also acknowledging that, like, it's not a fantastic movie, but fun.
All right.
Yeah, I recommend it.
I see why it was big in 2004. I get why it was so big and people were really into it, because I knew a lot of people who were into this movie. So
yeah,
I get it.
And I mean, and I think it holds up too. I still really enjoy it. I think it's an enjoyable film.
I don't think it's dated. Like, I don't think it being in 2004 really sets apart. I think this movie could have easily taken place in 2020, and I didn't really notice anything that made it seem like it was in the past. So
I was going to say we get the 2020 one, but that one is also set in 2004. It takes place
at the same time. All right, bud. What have you been up to? What have you been up to, bud?
I wasn't ready. Hold on.
Oh, no. I could go first.
No, I got it. What I've been up to, well, I've been playing a lot of Cyberpunk.
Nice. Yeah, I saw a couple Instagram stories.
Which similarly does not reach its potential. I will be returning Cyberpunk. And, you know, it's okay.
It's interesting to see it in a few months, like a Game of the Year edition.
Yeah, I think if you haven't gotten it already and you can get it after they do the patches and stuff, you'll have a better experience.
Yeah, I think so.
Movie-wise, I rewatched the original Scream.
Yeah, that's one of your favorites.
It's so good, man. It's so good. Employee of the Month with Dane Cook.
Oh, I hate that movie. It's such a dumb movie.
I like Dax Shepard, man. He's funny.
I like Dax Shepard, too.
And I like... I wish I could remember his name off the top of my head. The dude that plays Pedro
in
Napoleon Dynamite. I watched Sandy Wexler. I had a good experience with... I've been, like, kind of into Adam Sandler recently. I enjoyed that murder mystery movie with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, you watched that a couple weeks back. I remember you bringing that up.
Yeah, and I thought I heard people talking about Sandy Wexler, and I thought I remembered hearing some good things. So I was like, all right, let me watch this. It can't be that
bad. I've heard nothing but bad things about that one.
I couldn't remember what people said. Apparently they were all bad things. It was not great. It wasn't terrible, but it's not great. I watched 69, the saga of Danny Hernandez, the Tekashi 69 doc, which is pretty cool. And I watched American Pie yesterday.
Nice.
Holds up surprisingly well. I did watch WandaVision.
Nice.
I am stoked to watch more WandaVision.
Yeah, I actually watched WandaVision twice. I watched it once by myself just to not get spoilers, and then I rewatched it with Katrina a few days later.
I'm really interested.
The second time through more.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to check it out. It's only been under an hour to rewatch it.
Yeah.
I have a 20-year-old cousin, so it won't be hard for me to figure this out. Maybe I'll be able to report on it next podcast. I'm really curious how it works on its target audience, teenagers and early 20-year-olds, because I don't know if they have the reference points for I Love Lucy and Bewitched.
So I Love Lucy is actually doing pretty well. It's on Hulu. I know a lot of people who are currently watching it. Like, I've got one episode of I Love Lucy left before I'm done watching it with Katrina. It's very mixed. So I'm in a couple different like comic book groups and everything on Facebook, and a lot of people loved it and a lot of people just don't get it. And when I first watched, like my first watch through, I was kind of like, I see the potential. I trust Kevin Feige. I trust Marvel. It's going to deliver. I don't know if this was a strong start. Like, I don't think if you were on the fence about it, I don't think this is going to reel you in. But if you're a Marvel fanatic, you're going to keep it going.
Sure. And I think that's what they're banking on. I feel like the Bewitched and I Love Lucy throwback black and white stuff is all enjoyable, even if you don't know what they're referencing.
Yeah,
and I agree. That is the secret weapon. Like, as long as it's enjoyable, then who cares?
There are some good jokes in there. I thought it's very well written.
Yeah, it's well written, well done. So I guess I'm just, you know, it doesn't matter one way or the other, but I'm just curious how many of those references like people are getting. I'm sure I'm missing some. I haven't watched a ton of I Love Lucy, but I grew up with Nick at Night and stuff, so I have a frame of reference for it, you know.
So I could tell you Katrina loved it. So we've been watching I Love Lucy for the last like 2 months or so. There's 180 something episodes of I Love Lucy. Yeah. So we're almost done with it. She loved WandaVision.
That's awesome.
It's very mixed on like forums right now, but it's apparently the highest rated Marvel property right now on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. any other things that you've been up to, bud?
No. Do you have any theories for WandaVision? Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
I have a couple. I think. Or
should we save that for a separate conversation?
Yeah, we could do it really quickly, I think.
Okay. That might be maybe after the next episode, but that could be a good Patreon episode.
Yeah. So they've already pretty much said that there's going to be like a spiritual trilogy of this series. Doctor Strange 2 and Spider-Man 3.
So, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, so there's a couple things if you go through, like I happen to see somebody's gone through frame by frame on this, obviously looking for Easter eggs, but in the second episode, the animated opening, there's a in the crawl space as they the like pan down, there's like a Reaper's helmet is in there. Yeah. They mention the devil's in the details a couple of times, so I'm thinking Mephisto is going to be the big baddie, which is essentially the devil of the Marvel universe. And Mephisto can go through and change the past with like deals and whatnot. Like there's a big story arc with Spider-Man where to save Aunt May, he makes a deal with Mephisto where he never married Mary Jane kind of thing. And it completely changed the status quo for Spider-Man for the worse, right, if I might add. But I think Mephisto is going to be in there. And I think this is really going to set up the multiverse, which is what the phase four is supposed to be all about. So I think this is going to be huge for the MCU.
Yeah, it's definitely setting up the multiverse. Like, I think Kevin Feige is on record saying that this the end of this leads directly into Doctor Strange 2.
They've already confirmed Elizabeth Olsen's in Doctor Strange 2. Yeah. And Doctor Strange will be in Spider-Man 3.
Right. I've also heard a theory that the end of this show like fucks up Wanda so bad that she kind of becomes the villain of Doctor Strange 2.
I'd be cool with that. Because, I mean,
yeah, I think that's pretty interesting.
Some of the biggest stories in Marvel, there's the House of M and Avengers Disassembled, where she literally broke reality twice.
So that this is another theory that, you know, House of M ends with her saying no more mutants, right? And getting rid of all the X-Men and mutants in the world. And obviously they can't do that here because we have the opposite problem. We already don't have mutants, but we're trying to find a way to bring them in. So a theory that I've heard going around is that they kind of do like more mutants or mutants, which I, you know, I like the sentiment of that, but I don't know that I see that actually happening that way.
I think we're going to find out. They're going to retroactively make Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver mutants, and that they were picked by Strucker. to experiment with the Soul Stone specifically because they had the potential.
Yeah. Another thing that I've heard that I like is that they were already mutants. And that's sort of a retcon, but they were mutants, but that gene is latent. And having contact with
The Soul Stone.
Infinity Stone. It's not the Soul Stone.
No, not the Soul Stone, the Mind Stone.
Is what unlocked their potential. Yeah. So if you look at it that way, then maybe Thanos snapping everybody is a thing that unleashes everybody's potential. Theory. Or, you know, half of whatever. Makes I think sense. That could be a thing. But that feels like a lot for WandaVision to bring into their world based on what we know they're already sort of dealing with. So
maybe that is a Patreon episode. Once the series wrapped up, we can kind of hash it out and go and see what it is.
I think they're doing a great job with it. I'm really interested to see where it goes.
I'm definitely intrigued. And I trust Kevin Feige. Like, I know it's going to deliver by the end. So,
yeah,
you know, I wasn't over, you know, I wasn't underwhelmed. I wasn't overwhelmed. Sorry. I was just whelmed.
Yeah. I was pleasantly whelmed.
Yeah. So just, I'm just going to like kind of shotgun what I watched. Cause I had a lot of time cause Katrina was really busy the last couple of weeks. So, based off your recommendation and the internet's recommendation, I got around to watching Ted Lasso.
Hell yeah.
I watched it all in less than 24 hours. I watched like one episode before bed. And then the next day I like shotgun the rest while I watched like two or three while I was cleaning the kitchen. And then I just sat there.
I think
for like
we watched
3 hours
in one shot.
It. Yeah. No, it's like you said, I can't say what exactly I liked about it. I don't think it's necessarily the funniest show. It's just a positive guy. Like it's just super positive from beginning to end.
Yeah. It's just like, it's wholesome, but without being like saccharine.
Yeah. It was really easy to watch. I watched, you know, it's 10 episodes at 30.
It makes me feel good.
Yeah, it was a good show. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I shotgunned it all. I caught up to Superstore. I started watching that a few weeks back. So I caught up to the current season, which is now the COVID season. So that's a little rough. I also watched an episode, like the season finale of like season 4 was like one of the characters is undocumented and didn't realize he was undocumented until he was an adult. And so like ICE comes and arrests him and it's like, pretty gnarly. So like that was weird. And then like the 4 or 5 episodes that are out for this season are all about COVID. So it's kind of stressful to watch it, but I kind of like it because it normalizes like wearing masks and like there are people who are scared and there are people who are socializing and people are like, you shouldn't be socializing. So I kind of like that. Maybe if COVID is in the media, people will start to relate. Cause for whatever reason, people relate to TV characters more than they relate to real people out in the real world. It's
their
really
neighbor.
Sad. I started watching Scrubs again. I'm like a season and a half. I'm almost done with season 2. I attempted to watch Miracle Workers. I feel like it's kind of like The Grudge, where it's an interesting premise. Don't know if it executed perfectly. It has Daniel Radcliffe, Steve Buscemi. They're like angels and God, and it's like, It hasn't clicked for me, and I've watched like 3, so I don't know if I'm going to do any more. In terms of movies, I watched Soul on Disney Plus. Fantastic. Beautiful movie.
Heard nothing but good things.
I watched Escape from New York. I'm still kind of on my Kurt Russell and John Carpenter kick.
Oh, yeah.
So I watched Escape from New York. Had to watch another Edgar Wright movie, watch The World's End. It's fun. I still think Hot Fuzz is probably my favorite of the three, but I think The World's End is still fantastic and underrated.
Yeah, it's so good.
And then one of Katrina's friends had a decent-sized role in the season premiere of 9-1-1. And so we watched that, and that show is... No, he's 9-1-1 Lone Star, the spinoff.
Oh, I didn't know that. I haven't seen him.
Yeah, so there's 9-1-1 has Peter Cross and Angela Bassett and Jennifer Love Hewitt, and it takes place in Los Angeles.
Right.
It's fucking terrible. Like, it's laughably bad. Like, it's so over the top, like, it's really melodramatic. It's fucking terrible. But our friend played a character who got like hit by a bus while in a skyscraper. Like, the bus flew off the freeway because of the Hollywood Reservoir dam broke, and like the water got over the freeway, pushed a bus off an overpass, and it flew into a building and
that actually
struck
sounds
our
awesome.
Friend. No, it's fucking terrible. It's really terrible. It's well acted.
I can't remember if I brought this up in previous weeks. Did you watch Mythic Quest? Did I talk about watching it?
It's we so did. Good. Yeah, we talked about it before.
Okay.
I think every episode had a moment where I laughed my ass off, like really loud, but overall, I didn't think the show was that good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Anything else?
All right. No, I think that's everything.
All right. Grudge. Let's talk about this other one.
Hey, man. It's been like 12 years since we made a Grudge movie. Do we want to try to open that can of worms again? Make some
which
money?
Movie?
Make
a quick which buck? Movie is
the
this?
The Grudge? The Grudge?
The Ring?
Yeah. We're going to remake The Ring.
Oh, all right. That sounds
they
like
actually did that a couple of years ago, and it was called Rings, I think it was.
I think it's supposed to, that's kind of a similar thing where it's a sequel, but it's not.
So this was originally meant to be a reboot. And
you have to actually try to pitch this to me.
No, that was the pitch. You remember The Grudge? We made a bunch of money off it. Let's try it again.
All right. Mine was a bit
that's
of a
really what
too.
It was.
Yeah. All right.
So, but let's make it entirely in America now. That's what it is. Okay. So this was originally meant to be a hard reboot. And then for whatever reason, they decided to make it a sidequel. And it's only very tangentially linked to the original series. Like,
I don't hate this idea.
No.
I think it's an interesting idea to restart a franchise.
Yeah, so it's a soft reboot kind of thing. Like, it basically, there's one woman who we didn't see in the 2004 movie who stepped foot in the house briefly and then came back to her home in Pennsylvania and then, like, brought the curse to America, which I think fundamentally breaks the curse because it's like,
hold
okay,
on.
Well, now the curse is here.
We'll get into that. Let's not start there. Is that woman, they had to retcon the original movie to get her in there, right? Because I don't think that there's a way that she could have existed in the original movie.
No, essentially she was just like a third nurse who like went to check in on like Yoko and then walked in and didn't see anything and then like walked back out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and in the original movie, like, I think they the couple that moved in said, oh, they assigned this woman Yoko, who's really nice. She'll be here to check on mom later or whatever. And then Yoko shows up and dies. And then Sarah Michelle Gellar is assigned. So there's no space for this third nurse to exist. But now in this movie, they're saying, oh no, there was a phone call. And she stepped foot in the house.
Yeah, was she a real estate agent, maybe, who's looking at the house after the grizzly murders? Because there was like bags of trash, like a ton of bags of trash.
I think that's another secret power of the Grudge ghosts is that they bag up trash and put it outside.
Yeah. So essentially, I guess, should we go? We'll do the same thing. I'm just gonna shotgun a summary of this movie really fast. If I'm wrong, correct me, but we'll go through it. So
she's a
living
nurse. She is a living
nurse. Okay, so she was a nurse. So this woman checks in on the house from the 2004 movie.
Wait a second. Are you reading the?
No, I'm not reading it.
Let me do this one because you did the last one and I'm looking at the order of stuff. So okay, 2004, same year, and actually I think like days before the 2004 movie takes place. This live-in nurse Fiona Landers. Is disturbed by some things that she saw inside of this house, and she decides fuck this job, I'm going back to America, reuniting with her husband and young daughter. Kayako possesses Fiona and causes her to bludgeon Sam to death and drown her daughter before committing suicide by stabbing herself in the throat. And these are all told out of order, so that's the reveal at the end of the movie, but we're just going to talk about it in chronological order again. Detectives Goodman and Wilson, and Goodman is the one is Damien Bashir, who we hang out with for most of the movie, and his old partner Wilson investigate the murders. William Sadler, hell yeah, death. They're unsettled by the house. Goodman refuses to enter, but Wilson enters it and starts to lose his grip on sanity and becomes hysterical when he spots Fiona's ghost outside of Goodman's car later on. He tries to commit suicide by shooting himself, but he's unsuccessful and is committed to a psychiatric asylum. These two real estate agents, Peter and Nina Spencer, who are played by John Cho, and the woman from The Hunt, whose name I don't remember.
She's also from Glow.
Betty Gilpin.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. She's from Glow. This real estate agent couple who the woman is pregnant, like 7 months pregnant with this kid, discover that their kid is going to be born with a rare genetic disorder. Peter looks into selling 44 Reuben Drives and stumbles across Melinda's ghost.
Melinda's the daughter.
He hangs out with her for a little bit because she's just this woman or a young girl all alone. She has like a nosebleed and stuff. He's like, well, I can't leave this kid alone. but Peter's immediately attacked by Fiona, the mom, and Melinda, the daughter ghost, before fleeing the house and is quickly corrupted by the curse. He kills Nina and their unborn child before drowning himself, which is not a thing that you can physically do in the bathtub. I mean, you can't do it in the way that he does. Like, this movie has him filling up the bathtub and then just putting his head in the water.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. I thought it made more sense that Melinda, because we saw Melinda in the bathtub several different times throughout the movie. I thought that Melinda did it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense, but there's so many things that are inconsistent with these ghosts that
that
doesn't jive with me. So now there's another couple that gets grudged.
An elderly couple.
In 2005, an elderly couple, Faith and William Matheson, move into the house. Faith is played by fucking Lynn Shay, who is incredible, but should not have been cast in this movie because she's in every ghost movie.
Yeah, she is.
For the last decade. It was just so distracting for her to be in this movie. And then her husband, William, is played by Frankie Faison, who's been in a million things and is great. Faith suffers from dementia and a terminal illness, and William is just sort of taking care of her. He calls over Lorna Moody, who's an assisted suicide consultant. Faith is infected by the curse and starts to see Melinda around the house. Lorna, this is another one of the worst parts of the movie for me. Lorna suggests to William that they leave the house, but William reveals that he's aware of the ghosts and suggests that it implies a future where people get to be with their loved ones after death. Lorna says, you know what? Let me stay with you for a few days. I can't help you with this assisted suicide, which is the reason that you called me over, but I just want to live here for a few days and help you cook some dinner or something.
Right.
What the fuck is she going to do?
Well, I mean, she's a psychiatrist of some kind, I think. So I think she's just there to try to...
It's not even clear that he's paying her.
No.
Like, she's just going to live there for a while. It came off to me like she's a grifter and that she just needs a place to lay low for a few days.
I know that's not
what's happening. I'm just saying that's the vibe of the whole thing.
I thought she was just like, well, I'm a psychiatrist. I might be able to give you some coping skills if I see how you live for a couple
of
days.
That's in the movie that she's a psychiatrist. I think that she's, I mean, maybe she has that training, but the movie doesn't really talk about
that. Well, I think she does because the reason we get to that point is because she has to decide if whether or not the woman is mentally there and mentally capable of making decisions. So to do that, to be in that field and make that decision, you'd have to be a psychiatrist of some kind.
I guess. That doesn't explain to me why she decides to stay there for 3 days.
Yeah.
At any rate, like the next day, Lorna discovers that Faith has killed William by stabbing him in the neck and sliced off all of her own fingers with a kitchen knife. She flees in horror only to be attacked by Sam's ghost in her car, which crashes, killing her and setting up the crime scene or the dead body that kicks off this whole movie that's discovered by the other cop that we're following this whole time.
New cop Muldoon.
Yeah, so in 2006, rookie detective Muldoon moves to town with her son Burke, following by her husband's death from cancer.
I've never heard Muldoon the term along rookie with, detective. Like detective like implies you've been a cop for a while. Like you can't be a rookie. Like you transferred, but you're not a rookie.
Well, maybe it's like the first year that you've been promoted from beat cop to detective. But she doesn't come off like a rookie to me.
No.
Muldoon, along with Goodman, her new partner, are called to the woods where Lorna's corpse has been discovered. Goodman becomes uncomfortable when they learn that Lorna has been visiting 44 Rayburn Drive house where all this shit's taking place. Muldoon questions this and gets into the curse of the house and everything that's been going on there and kind of goes down his old partner's path of becoming obsessed and starts doing all this research on it. She visits Wilson in the asylum, who tells her that all the people who enter the house are become victims of the curse. And this is like the big info dump of this movie.
Yeah.
Which
one of two big
in the original. Dumps. In the original, you know that it's being in, you know that you're experiencing an info dump, but it's kind of done in like an artful way and it's interesting. You're like, oh, I'm finally getting some answers.
Yeah. She's doing research. She's going to the library. She's asking people questions and going to multiple sources. This is just one guy telling her everything.
even when she's in the house and like the lights change and she sees Bill Pullman and all that stuff, like that's an interesting way to experience that, even if it's, you know, kind of a cheap way to get that info out there. But yeah, in this one, they have like a flashback with William Sadler narrating like, when you die in the grip of a horrible blah blah blah, and then Frankie Faison does it two more times after
the
that
text at the front at the twice of the movie. Yeah,
there's three info dumps describing this fucking movie. So William Sadler gouges out his eyes so he can stop seeing the ghosts. Muldoon is afraid that the curse is gonna hurt her son, so she does a ring thing and realize that Fiona's the one that brought it abroad. She's attacked by Lander's ghost, and then she does the ring thing where she's trying to protect her son and blah blah blah. She goes to the house and douses it in gasoline, and that's where she sees visions of how Fiona murdered her family.
She sees everything playing out like the first movie did.
Yeah, and then the end is exactly what you think it is. Like, yeah, she's killed by the ghost.
And there's like one like line of dialogue where they try to link it back to the original movie again, like, oh yeah, I was just like on the phone with a detective from Japan, and he's called it a Ju-on. And
it feels like, you know that that Batman Begins thing that we saw on Instagram earlier.
Oh yeah, Michael Caine.
Michael Caine is like, this truly is where Batman Begins.
Yeah,
that's how it felt in this movie.
Yeah,
William Sadler is like, and then you know, it's too bad. Too bad we got all these Ju-ons that are grudging us.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I get it.
I watched this movie first, and then I read, like, you know, I was doing research on it, and apparently, like, it didn't do well. Like, this movie, it still made money, but it critically was, like, got an F on, like, CinemaScore, and people were, like, really concerned with the gore, and I honestly didn't think this movie was that gory. Like, based off, like, how much the reviews talk about how gory this movie is, now, compared to the other ones, absolutely, it's gory. But, like, compared to...
Right.
A lot of movies, like, it's just like blood pouring down people's faces or blood pouring down. Like, I've seen way worse in movies.
I think this movie was less viscerally gory in the way that it's not like Hostel or Saw or something. But I think that there's a number of shots of like decomposed corpses that were really gnarly.
I think probably what I thought was the most gratuitous is like when you find the corpse of Jorna, the suicide consultant, you see she's like, she was at a car crash. And so you see like her arm, her bones sticking out of her arms, like gripped around the wheel. Mm-hmm. And when we actually see the car crash, you see it, the crash, and then it like goes inside for just a second. It's like a couple of frames just so you can see the bones spurt out.
Yeah.
And then it shows the crash from another angle, and it just shows it a couple times. Like, that seemed a little gratuitous. But to me, that was the only thing that I thought was...
I mean, there's a scene of Lin Shaye cutting off her fingers. I think that's the worst one.
I think that's bad, but I don't feel like that was necessarily gratuitous. Like, it made more sense, like, to focus on that versus focusing on an arm breaking, showing that from three different angles.
Sure.
I hear you. It's gross, but I think, you know, when you're somebody who's possessed and creepy, like, I kind of get that. But
this movie... We were talking about missed opportunities for the last movie and execution and not living up to potential. And I feel like all of that is much more applicable to this movie for me. And I have like good things to say about this movie. I think a lot of the shot compositions are really interesting and don't feel they're not what I expect from like a Hollywood horror, mainstream horror movie. They used a nice wide lens on a lot of stuff that I really enjoyed.
It sets the tone. It's grim
And I think this movie has a better handle on what it's trying to say thematically than the 2004 one. I think this movie is about the different ways that people deal with and are consumed by grief. Every couple in this movie is dealing with some sort of death or the impending death of a loved one. It's the unborn baby, the woman with dementia, the widow and son who have lost their husband, father,
losing a partner.
Yeah. So I think this movie is much more in tune with what it wants to say thematically.
That's funny. But I feel the opposite.
It doesn't execute on it.
because I think all the things you said, I picked up on those too. But I think it was just like, it was almost like patting itself on the back, like, hey, look at all these themes and these motifs and all these relationships
well,
we put
no, I agree.
But like nothing is, it's all very surface level. Like, look how smart I am.
I'm saying,
yeah,
I'm kind of saying the same thing as you. Okay. I agree. I'm saying that I don't think that the original movie was as concerned with those things.
Yeah.
And I think this one was, but didn't know what to do with them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The way I kind of looked at it, and I don't know if this is the best way to say it, but like obviously last summer we had, and it's still going, but the Black Lives Matter movement, there are times where I'll see like a business put a Black Lives Matter thing on there. And I almost feel like it's like, hey, look at me. I notice what's going on. And that could be the cynic in me. I kind of feel like that's what this movie did with a lot of things. Like, hey, look at all these social issues we're bringing up. Yeah, we're woke. But yep. I feel like it was so surface level. Like, there was no real thing. It's just acknowledging those things without really acknowledging them. But, yeah, that's kind of
yeah, how I mean, that's fair. I think I look at it like it wanted to say something about grief and wasn't confident enough or...
Yeah,
just didn't execute it well enough. And specifically, the whole story with the real estate agents with John Cho and Betty Gilpin.
I thought this was a waste of John Cho. I love John Cho.
It was such a fucking downer, man.
Yeah,
like they spent 30 minutes talking about a baby being born without a brain. Like, so yeah. Fucking sad.
Yeah,
I just don't need that from this movie.
No, well, like what's
and it doesn't I, like I, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with a. Like, I'm watching a ghost movie.
Yeah.
I expect it to be scary and fucked up, but, like, that's just sad, man.
Yeah. And one of the things I did like with his scene was, like, when he gets kind of sucked in by Melinda, like, when he shows up to the house and, like, she comes out as a little girl and he, like, her nose starts bleeding. He's like, oh, my God. And, like, he's going through his thing where he wants to be a father and yeah. knows he's not going to be. So he wants to take care of this little girl. And so as soon as he opens the door, like, the camera looks at her and she kind of smiles. I thought that was actually pretty effective. I liked that.
But I don't like that the little girl is evil in this movie.
Well, and that's
because Toshio wasn't evil.
Yeah, that's the thing that drove me crazy about this one, where it was like, in the first movie, it was very clear that Kayako was the main ghost. She was doing most of it. We saw the other ghosts, but in this, it seems like Melinda was the ghost that was causing more problems, because she was the one that most people were seeing.
And also...
And then at the very end, we got the Fiona.
Yeah, and also Fiona was killed by I'm gonna say her name wrong again, Kayako.
Yeah.
So like,
why is she cursed now?
Why does she become a grudge?
Yeah. And why didn't everybody else, Sarah Michelle, why didn't any of the characters from the first movie become grudges?
Exactly. Like, they all died from being killed by this ghost.
And we touched on it on the last one where it's like, well, why isn't every time there's a murder a ghost? And here it's like, okay, well now it can spread. So Kayako, if she kills somebody somewhere else, well now that place is cursed. So it's like,
yeah, and to put a finer point on it, anybody, so in the first one, this is why I brought this up, in the first one it's very clear that if you set foot in the house you die.
Yeah.
And that's the rule, you die from the ghost. In this one, if you set foot in the house you die, but then you might also kill people around you and you might also become a grudge ghost.
Yeah, it's inconsistent.
And yeah, and it's like, okay, well, and then do those people create more ghosts or kill other people around them? Like, where does it end? What's the rule?
Right,
here?
So like, we the ending we kind of just brushed through, but like the very end of the movie, and there's two endings: there's the international version and the American version. The international version ended with the female detective getting her son out and going somewhere else and they live happily ever after. In this version, she like sees her son in the house, and then like the son doesn't like complete a catchphrase that they use, so she realizes it's like the ghost trigger. So now in this version, the ghosts also can disguise themselves as family members to try to trick you. And so she sees through it. She tries to burn down the house. She gets to her new house with her son, that presumably they moved again, and she's like, hey son, like, you're a good son. And she's like hugging the son. And then she's looking down the hallway and then she sees her son walking out. She's like, bye mom. Like, I'm going to the school bus. And she's like, oh shit, I got grudged again. And he gets killed, like dragged off. And so it's like, well, so now is she now going to be a grudge? Is this house
is that fucked? Yeah, is that a new yeah, grudge like, house?
It doesn't make any sense. It's almost like an STD, like it follows or whatever. Like yeah. now it's just
it
like,
grudges.
It grudges. Like it's just to me.
It feels.
I wish it didn't link to the original at all. I wish it was just, let's just make an original version in America.
I don't mind it linking to the original, but it just should be Kayako
consistent.
Again. It should be Kayako. Yeah. It shouldn't be a new grudge ghost.
But even that, like, it still doesn't make sense. Like, why? I can understand Kayako following Fiona because that's the rule. Right, if you walk into the house, you get killed. And that could have been interesting if it was just like almost like Final Destination, like this woman trying to stay like a step ahead of Kayako. But why did Kayako now? Why is that house cursed? Like the general conceit of this movie, I just don't buy.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. This movie feels like if I make Ju-on in 2002 and then Hollywood comes knocking at my door and they're like, listen, we're going to pay you all this money. We want to remake it in Hollywood with Sarah Michelle Gellar, you know, the fucking it horror girl of the moment, blah, blah, blah. My concern would be, oh, they're going to take all of the heart and soul and like brains of my movie. And they're going to make it a bastardized, you know, Yankee version of it. And
that's what this is.
And that's what this is. And they got really lucky because the 2004 version is like, oh no, they let the original director make it. They made it in Tokyo and he got to do it the way that he wanted to do it. So it doesn't look like an American movie. It doesn't feel like an American movie. Yeah. It's its own thing. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's him getting to redo his vision. And that it feels pretty true to what I think. I want to say his name because we keep on bringing him up. Takashi Shimizu. And this one feels like the fucking bastardized,
feels American like a cash
Hollywood
grab.
Soulless garbage.
Yeah.
And again, it's frustrating because I feel like there was some potential in this one. Oh, and another thing I was going to say, like there's a lot, the cinematography is like very mixed because there's a lot of like, composed shots, but the whole movie feels so oversaturated and like blown out.
Yeah.
Notice that?
There's like, well, yeah, really they definitely like the color palette is feel. Just odd. Like it's almost like a grunge music video. Like,
yeah.
Like they're well, just like, look at this dirty movie.
Yeah. The color palette almost feels similar to Saw where it's a bunch of like gross yellows and greens.
Yeah.
But I don't think that ties into this movie at all. I almost would rather they went with a muted color palette, which I think is more like the original or even like the Zack Snyder movies or something. But I feel like that translates better to this story than all these bright greens and yellows and stuff.
Yeah.
This movie also, the cast is like kind of fucking incredible.
I think the performances are good.
They're all doing great, and
this content.
They're all doing great, but it's also a lot of good actors. Damien Bashir, John Cho, Betty Gilpin, Lin Shaye, William Sadler, Frankie Faison, and they're all kind of wasted.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's crazy that a movie can have that many dope character actors, and still kind of blow it.
Yeah. So
I appreciate that it's only 94 minutes. I like that.
I didn't see this character, but one of the big trivias for this movie was that this was the final film of actor Stephanie Shirk, who died of suicide in 2019. She was married to Demian Bashir, who's
no
the
shit.
Detective, but she had a small role as a therapist in this. I don't remember another therapist in this movie, but somebody who was in this movie like died shortly after making it, so that's sad. Yeah. This is the first grudge film not to have the original guy, Takashi Shimizu. He directed the first two. He directed the first two and then he was the producer on the third movie, but he didn't actually direct it. So this is the first one that didn't have him involved at all. And
he's the special sauce.
Makes a difference. Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer. It's kind of a bummer that Sam Raimi is attached to this. I'd be interested in his, you know, private thoughts about this movie.
Yeah. The other thing I didn't like the prosthetics on William Sadler with his disfigured face. Like, I didn't think they looked that good.
I kind of like that.
Oh. Like, I thought it was, like, overly stylized.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
I was surprised that those doctors in the world did such a good job of putting his face back together.
Yeah. It's not a good movie.
It's not.
Same thing. It had potential. I just think that they squandered it and kind of ruined the curse. Like the to me, what makes the Grudge is the curse. And it just, it took something that was already kind of muddy. It just really made it muddied and just made it like the Grudge can do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like in the original movie, it was muddy, but it was sort of okay because there were one or two hard rules, and it relied and executed, it relied upon and then executed on this like atmosphere that it needed to sort of tell its story. And this one, it's like, no, we're going to over explain the one thing that we have, and then we're going to make that more confusing with these three or four other elements, and then we're not going to tell it in as experiential a way.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't think this movie needed to happen, man.
No, and you know, it was a bummer watching it. I would have rather watched Murder Mystery.
Yeah, I really wish we watched the Japanese version.
Well,
and their good news, buddy. First American one.
We can still do that. So in September 29, the director, Nicholas Pesci, expressed interest in a crossover movie between The Grudge and the American The Ring film series, which was done in 2016 with Sadako versus Kayako in Japan. In January 2020, when this movie came out last year, Pesci expressed further interest in a sequel being set in both a different part of the world other than America or Japan, and in a different, less contemporary time period compared to various previous films.
So he wants to go like in the past.
And I'm not interested in that.
No, I don't want to see any more of this.
I'm not interested in this guy doing any more Grudge movies.
No, I'm not interested in like this version of it anymore. Like, I'd rather it just be a hard reboot now.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
Yeah, I'd rather just start fresh, make it your own thing.
I wonder if Nicholas Pesci had a different writer and he had a little bit more experience under his belt. A lot of the problems that I had with the movie, and we're talking about execution and the look and feel of it, I feel like are early career director issues. Yeah. I think someone with a little bit more experience under their belt does a better version.
Yeah. Like I said, I think both movies had potential. I just don't think... It's funny, you think the first movie lived up to... reached its max potential. I don't agree. But I think this one had even more potential with, you know, newer technology and everything, and it just squandered it. Disappointed. Hashtag disappointed.
Well, the good news is tomorrow's the inauguration.
Woo! We don't
have to deal with Trump anymore. Completely unrelated.
Yep.
But you'll be listening to this in the future, so hopefully there hasn't been, you know.
Yeah.
Why am I taking us down a dark hole?
Just give us your plugs. Let's wrap this shit up.
If you want more existential dread, I'm on Twitter at Polisci, PULISCI. If you want to follow along with movies I'm watching, I'm on Letterboxd, also at Polisci. And I'm over on Instagram at Dyslexic, DYSAlexIC.
And you guys could check out everything that's MDX Pods related at mdxpods.com, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at MDX Pods. If you want to support the show, we've got a Patreon. It's patreon.com/mdxpods. Chip in whatever you want there, and you get the all of our content at least a day or two early. We're going to start doing exclusive episodes. We have our first Tenet episode up. That was fun.
It's only $1 to subscribe to the Patreon.
Yeah.
It's only $1 a month.
Only $1, guys.
And you'll get a couple episodes. You know, maybe we'll send you.
Oh, there's tiers. If you do upper tiers, you get like movies and shit. So,
but it's at least $1. There's basically no reason not to do it.
Yeah, help us out, guys. We've got it. We had to pay for these like shitty movies.
Oh, I got the Stars free trial for a week.
Oh, nice.
So I'm good.
Yeah, this movie, but the 2020 version. Just for those of you who haven't seen it, if you guys decide you want to watch it, it came out a year ago, and it's only available on Stars. Or to purchase. You can't even rent this digitally anywhere.
Yeah, that seems like
I had Stars,
issue.
So I was good. But yeah, that's some bullshit.
Thanks for tuning in.
First world problems. Thanks for listening.